Welcome to the True Face Podcast, where we have conversations about what we can learn from what's going on in our lives. My name is Robbie Engel, and I'll be your guide as we learn how to increase trust and experience grace. So we do this podcast as a True Face tribe, and really at the source of it, a lot of us are stuck in our relationships with God, with others, with ourselves, and we end up wondering, is this really all there is to it? True Face as a ministry exists for that purpose, to equip individuals and churches and organizations with a catalog of resources to help people experience a deeper relationship with God and others. And we do that by learning to trust who God is and who God says we are through experiencing the relationships that Jesus made possible, which I spent decades as a Christian missing. And today I'm excited because we are going to have a guest, Janet Newberry, on, who I just met when I came into the role. And she's a newer friend who we had corresponded back and forth with. I got her book about a year ago and read her book, Education by Design, Not Default. She sent it to me, and it was just so cool how her passion and her heart as an educator, as a former teacher, as a principal who had then gone on to start a business of consulting organizations and schools on how to educate students and the next generation with clarity and direction and with this grace, this posture of love. And so I read her book and it was awesome. And I've wanted to meet her and have her on the podcast to talk about it since. So Janet Newberry, welcome to the True Face Podcast. How are you?
I am doing well. Thank you, Robbie. It is an honor to be here and to see you and to meet you too.
Yeah. What did I miss in the intro bio? You have had a pretty amazing journey, and I wanted you on here because as we get stuck in our relationships, the first time we had a conversation, in hearing your journey and into getting unstuck and the freedom that led to, but also the challenges and the stumbling blocks of that over the previous years of your life, I just thought it was such a reminder of some of the joys and some of the challenges in this journey of getting unstuck and experiencing deeper relationships and what Jesus made possible that I just thought we got to share and hear more about your story and the processes. And I'm really excited to do that with each other today on this Zoom and also with the broader True Face tribe, which you have been a part of and a supporter and a key True Face tribe member from an Airstream, from your home, from all over the places. You've been a nomadic traveling consultant. I've been fascinated with watching you on social media for the past year or two. So give me a little unpacking on that. How long were you in an Airstream and tell us, what were you doing?
We were in an Airstream for almost 3 years. Our Airstream was named Freedom. Our truck was named the Plow. It was a leap of faith. Really, I had spent a long time, 20 years in public education, almost 10 years in private education. And I took a year sabbatical and just really did some research about the neurology of fear and love and what helped kids get unstuck when they struggled. And what is working in our current public education system or private, and what is not. And the Lord launched me into this consulting career that one of my clients happened to give me John Lynch's Two Roads YouTube video. Mm. And I was like, this is it. This is it. This is what I'm doing with children. I'm saying, don't try to please me. Can we build a relationship of trust here? And will you let my love help you grow stronger in the midst of your struggle? And so as that consulting business continued, we had this grand idea that instead of paying a lot for me face-to-face, maybe I could record online classes and offer what I do online. And we traveled the country. I was doing speaking engagements and we were plotting our next stop with who we'd have dinner with, who was in our online class. Because online is great, but face-to-face is where intimacy happens and vulnerability and trust gets built. And so we had a platform called At the Table with America. And we just mapped our way around 26 states and had a blast. And honestly, Robbie, I thought it was all for the ministry and for the consulting business. And it, I don't think that was God's first priority at all.
Wow.
Because I think Doug and I would always say that maybe our favorite day out of those traveling years was the day that we got to Bryce Canyon in Utah, and we parked and he's on one side of the truck and he doesn't know that on the other side of the truck, I'm just like running to the edge of the rail where we can get a view of Bryce Canyon. And we're both weeping when we get there, just weeping and realizing that in all the ways that my work offers to help families redeem childhood, right? That God was taking us on this trip that required every ounce of faith. We didn't know where we were going. We didn't know how it was going to get paid for. We didn't know how long it was going to last, just like a kid on vacation.
Yep.
And like right there at the edge of Bryce Canyon, we both just heard the Father in his inaudible voice say, "Thank you for trusting me to be your dad.
That's awesome.
If you're going to help other people redeem childhood, I needed to redeem yours first."
That
and it
awesome.
Really was a redeeming childhood adventure. We say we lived in a Yeti for 3 years, you know?
Yep.
Oh, it was crazy.
That's awesome. How long have you been off the road now?
Well, as clearly as the Lord prompted us to buy it, he prompted us to sell it, and we sold it in 48 hours. And so had to find we're in an apartment in the Woodlands, Texas. And 2 months after we moved here, COVID started.
Yep.
So God knew we didn't want to be living in an Airstream during a pandemic. And we've been here, so almost a year and a half, I guess.
Wow. So looking back, 3 years in an Airstream, a lot of us have FOMO and are like, "God, it's amazing. We want to do it." I don't want to do it with 8 kids. We've had that conversation. It sounds terrible. But what was the best thing and what was like the hardest part about this Airstream life?
Oh, the best thing is that I love my husband and my husband loves me. And it was like one just huge, long vacation and chilled conversation and beautiful. One of my favorite hashtags is beauty is love. And the beauty of God's creation reminds me, it just stabilizes me. It just reminds me there is a creator of all of this beauty. The worst part is that RV parks are not beautiful. They are not beautiful, and a lot of dysfunction hangs out in RV parks. So there was trials, but
that's awesome.
But a fire pit is a great place to cry and pray and you know, let the healing waters flow, as the shack says. And it was a really it was a restorative trip for us. Really was.
That's cool. When we were talking, you've been on this faith journey that has been interesting, your journey into understanding this grace stuff and how you mentioned you got that two roads message and started doing a deep dive, and you've been a key part of the True Face team and support. And tell us more. I wanted to just spend some time hearing your faith journey and the difficulties and the challenges, because each of us is on a journey of understanding God's love more deeply and maturing into Christ-likeness and figuring out what this looks like. And for some of us, we stumble across some of the peace and the freedom of really understanding how we have the righteousness of Christ and how God sees us, not just how we see God. And that leads to such a different relational foundation that we venture into. I was hanging out with a friend the other day who was talking about how he had been a Christian for about 25 years until he really got grace. And now he's just alive and it's changing everything and how he's reading everything. And it's all it feels like just water on dry soil for him for the past 5 years. And he's in his 60s and it just came to him. And some stumble into it. I was leading a group one time and we were going through the cure, and a guy said, "I don't want this to be truth. Like, I don't like this." And his story was different than my other friend. And he goes, yeah, I don't like this. You know, and he was like amazing at everything he did in life. And he just was, he was like, it's way easier for me to just keep killing it. He was like a super Christian. He really is Superman. But the angst and the tension in his journey was interesting. So I was hearing your story, and we don't talk much about our journeys into really understanding and peeling back layers of the onion as we mature in our faith and understanding of these truths. So I just wanted to invite you on to share your story and to hear about it and learn what God's done in and through you over the past season of your life.
Yeah, a journey. Thanks. No, really thanks, because I have true faith to lean on and to stand on and to say thank you for helping me untangle a lifetime of theology that was choking me instead of holding me strong and giving me strength. Because I grew up the daughter of a Southern Baptist preacher. My mom struggled significantly with mental illness. And so between the two of those things, there was a lot of fear in our home, and there was a lot of performance obsession, and there was a lot of being all the expectations that come with being a preacher's kid and walking on eggshells so that mom is okay, and being responsible for a lot of, you know, my mom's health and my mom's sanity and my dad's reputation and all of those kinds of things. And you put God, it was a weird thing that happened in that environment. And I don't think I'm alone in this, that God and Jesus were wired together in my mind in a relationship of fear instead of in a relationship with love. And I knew that Jesus had died on the cross for me. I was baptized when I was 7. I knew I was going to heaven when I died. And I had gone to so many Bible studies. I had done all the disciplines, and I would not use the word freedom in my life. And I certainly would not describe my relationships with the people that mattered most to me as healthy. And as God would orchestrate it, I met Doug about 10 years ago. Yeah, about 10 years ago. And we tiptoed into our relationship in a way where, you know, that could be a whole episode on its own. But we started to really unpack. We knew what not to do in a marriage because it wasn't our first marriage, but we didn't know what to do. And the first thing we ever discovered and said to each other is, can we just not count, you know? And so I began experiencing transformational love in an earthly relationship. And then I signed up for high trust leadership. And then, you know, after I had contacted True Face about the Two Roads message and video, and Bruce said, Janet, you got to take high trust leadership. And Scott Morrison was my first teacher. And he can tell you, I was ticked. I was angry when I first discovered, and it was one of a mixed bag of emotional responses. But when I first discovered that I have a new identity in Christ. And when you said the righteousness of Christ, even in your conversation a while ago, I teared up. Because it is water to a dry soul, you know, to say, I don't have to muster this up myself. It is the gift of new life. And this is the gospel. And I was like, somebody should have told me this a long time ago. You know, I was really angry that I had spent so much of my life in Christian conversations and listening to sermons and I had missed out on the love of God and the power of grace and the difference it makes between trusting God or pleasing him. When pleasing always relies on my strength, not his, you know?
So you were a Christian for decades under this weighty blanket of fear of this carrying around when you're thinking about God and who Jesus is, and then you learn that there was a different way, that God saw you differently, and he was a God of love who looked on you with love, and so you could receive it with love, which is fear's opposing stronger emotion, you know, as perfect love casts out all fear, and you are frustrated. That's fascinating to me, because it, while there's peace and freedom in receiving the love, you said, how in the world am I just not getting this?
How in the world did I miss it? And I guess too, the way that God has equipped me and called me with purpose to help children and help families is I see that fear has infiltrated all of our systems in the same way that it's infiltrated religion. Hmm. And so it frustrated me for my own purposes that I had missed out on transformational relationships, that my relationships with in toxic marriage was transactional.
Yep.
And my relationship as a parent had been transactional, and my relationship as a teacher had been transactional, and that the invitation of God is to have a transformational relationship with him. And that is the model for life by design. And the way I define joy is not the absence of struggle, but joy means it's good to be me here with you in peace and in chaos and in struggle and in delight. And I'm here with you. Therefore, there is joy. And I had missed that for so long. And I would say the delight of it all coming through kind of a grieving of a religious past, you know, kind of a grieving of a religious past. And what did it cost in my relationships, and what I can still see it costing? I mean, to me, you've read my book, you know why, what, and here's the summary of the research that I did, that when we aim at the target of performance, maturity always gets stunted. But when we aim at giving children strong, trusting relationships and in intentionally supporting maturity, performance goes off the charts. And so in education, that was my heartbreak too, and my delight, because we have a new pathway. We have a new roadmap now.
Yeah. As a parent, how do I, that what you just said about the trusting relationship would lead to performance, not the other way around, that is hard. It is just so much easier for me to behavior manage my kids than get on their eye level and spend the time. What do you hope for me as a dad with young kids, based on all the research and the time you've spent in education around these truths?
Take the long view. Put relationships first, ahead of performance, ahead of behavior. You know, behavior is the echo of belief, so aim for belief modification. Look for the lies, because that's where you find fear, and offer the love that will cast out the fear in your child, and teach them to sort their attitudes and their behaviors into the categories of love and fear instead of the categories of good and bad, because I just think that's huge.
And that's really interesting for me and in my conversations with Emily, because we're homeschooling right now, and also trying to parent, and that's really interesting. If I look at my parenting decisions and interactions through the grid of love versus fear, I don't think I've done that. And I think most of the time we enter into conversation of what's the best thing we should do, what should we say, should we go to this school? Should we do that decision? Should we do this trip? Should we give them this punishment or that punishment? And underlying so much of this is fear that Emily and I have, that our kids will become weird, relational, disrespectful people as grownups on the behavior management side or the consequence side. And a fear that, oh crap, they're behind in reading. This one's behind in math. Like we're just, they're not going to be able to do this. And man, that they feel that. They've got to feel it because I feel it.
It's a culture of fear or a culture of love. It's what we breathe in. It's what we create. And so to try to shift that focus from sorting good and bad to sorting love and fear, and what is the motive and what is the root of what am I believing? It's back to what am I believing to be true? And it changes everything. And it's one of the reasons that on our podcast, we try to make love practical because we have a hard time sorting. For a culture, as a culture, we've done a weird and terrible thing to the word love. We call it an emotion. We call it, you know, and there's, I don't even want to get into all the Hebrew and Greek and translations and definitions, but we just don't, as a culture, know how to make love practical. And therein lies an interesting story in the sense that we have one commandment. And gosh, wouldn't it be great if small groups could equip us to know what it means to love one another? You know, what does it mean to love one another? We got one commandment, and have we made that practical? You know, what does it mean for me and for Doug? And what does it mean for, you know, me and a family or students or my children or grandchildren? How do we do that? And it's fascinating.
I just took a note that you said fear focuses on performance, but that doesn't work. It's unsuccessful. But fear in me as a dad for, you know, discipline or education or whatever, I focus on their performance because of the underlying fear, thinking that, you know, that they will be successful if I focus on performance. I don't believe that out loud, but my actions show that, and my heart posture shows that. But what you're saying, I know, is true, that trust actually results in performance, and love and the safety of an environment results in performance. It's like in counseling, like counselors see the issue and the problem right off the bat. And then but you learn pretty quickly. I was like a solutions focused therapist when I came out the gate. I was like, oh yeah, give me 5 sessions. This'll work. And it worked 0% of the time. I saw the problem. Hey, I'll pretty much tell you what it is, give you the plan to solve it. And it worked 0% of the time. But the slow walk with, help you identify what's not working, how you want to change. And then a client goes, I don't know why I'm paying this guy. He hadn't told me a single thing, given me any advice, but all of a sudden my life's better and changed and I'm doing all this stuff. You learn by years of skinning your knees as a counselor, ask a follow-up question, you know, and do not tell. Fixing does not do anything, you know, but we keep trying to fix each other, just like my fear focuses on performance. But man, these truths, if I do this shift in my brain, and I need to have some conversations with Emily. This changes things.
And most of the time we can't fix, but love can redeem.
Yeah. We know fixing doesn't do anything.
We know. And it goes back to what we know or what we trust and what we experience, and how do we intentionally support maturity? Because fear focuses on performance and love focuses on the person. I mean, how many times have you said that in a small group teaching on the cure? Right?
That's right. But
it's so practical, but it's not, because we don't have language to put around it. And so that's what I try to do, is put language around it. And that's what I tried to put in my book and our podcast and my daily Facebook journals that I put, is because I got to learn the language.
Yep.
I have to learn the language, because we speak a language of fear.
Yep.
We live in a culture of fear, and we speak a language of fear. And so we don't even realize the dialect and the words and the language. And so we can't think it if we can't speak it, you know, which comes first. I don't know, you know.
And to my shame narrative that I started going on a tangent on 1 minute ago that you guys were listening in on, it's like, no, it's so much like education, religion, marriage, relationships, systems, all those things you mentioned that you were frustrated about, going, why didn't anybody tell me this? It's not the transactional relational equation that I saw God with, that I saw myself with, to earn his love, to please him. That transactional, you saw affect every aspect of your life, religion, marriage, relationship systems. You said toxic marriage, education, all this stuff. And I just did that with my kids. And,
yes.
And that's okay because it's normal. All of us, it's weird for the transformational foundation of love being the key in relationships because that we need God to show up for that. And that is the beauty of the gospel, that we can trust him with that. And if it was easy, we wouldn't need God to show up. Right. And so
we wouldn't need each other to remind each other.
That's right. That's right. So I guess we should expect the norm in some ways that performance and a transactional mentality should be expected in our companies, in our organizations, in our churches. What you're saying is the narrow road, the opportunity of what Jesus made possible is what's you're experiencing, and it's okay to grieve, but not get mm-hmm. stuck in that.
Yeah, exactly. No, you can't, love won't let you stay stuck. Mm-hmm. It just won't. I mean, it is a force to be reckoned with. It has a frequency, it has a hormone, it moves you, you know, love won't let you get stuck, but it's also so much more than just a different theology.
Yeah.
And it has so much potential for more than just Christian conversations. There is a design for life, and it is transformational relationships.
Yep.
And when we put God beside us instead of above us as a judge, and he's for us and he's in us and he's helping us and he's reminding us who we are on our worst day, instead of disconnecting from us until we earn his another glance, you know, when we try to do a better dance the next day, it changes everything. And so that's my picture that I draw for students and children and parents, is that if you can draw a triangle in your mind with that's flat on the bottom and with a point at the top, a transactional relationship puts the authority figure at the top of that triangle, whether mm-hmm. it be God or a dad or a mom or a teacher, right? The authority figure sits at the top of that triangle while I sit at one corner of the triangle and life sits at the other, mm-hmm. whether that be what I can master on my own or what I'm struggling with. I better get this figured out so they will be pleased with me, so I will get my reward, et cetera, et cetera. But if you turn that triangle side, if you turn that triangle or in the way that it's still flat on the bottom, but life is at the top. Hmm. And the person that is loving me well is beside me at the bottom of the triangle. And together we're looking at life together and saying, whoa, that is a lot of sin. my, we'll work on it together when you're ready. That, you know, to borrow a quote from Two Roads. Or, you know, we're looking at issues together. There's the difference between a culture of fear and a culture of love. And there's where transformation and maturity is possible.
And that image is similar in our faith journey with Jesus by our side instead of authority we're trying to get to. And and that same principle of transformational relationships would be in the system of education.
Exactly.
That if a teacher is beside a student on this journey in life compared to expecting and on top of in an authoritative role.
And she's scared because she thinks you're behind too.
Yeah.
So take that, they're behind in reading. And my question is always, behind what?
Yeah.
You know, behind what? Because I've seen kids who have, you know, I worked with a 10-year-old who couldn't add or subtract. And 9 months later, she had gone through 3 years of curriculum because we had transformed the way she related with the teacher.
Yep.
You know, and so it's not learning is not on the timetable. That is a, you know, scope and sequence.
Janet, this conversation is for me. Anybody else listening is bonus territory. This is awesome. So I want to pull back in. So you jumped into this High Trust Leader course and you started this journey of going, I'm mad. Who didn't tell me this stuff? I'm grieving the lost opportunity. Give us a little more context for that past season of the journey of you understanding these truths and applying them in your life?
Yeah, because high trust leadership is a deep dive. I compare it to what seminary must be like. You know, it's a deep dive into the scriptural foundations of the new covenant and the original good news, the gospel. And so I knew scripture, but I had read it through a fear-based lens. And so it was really just giving me a new lens to look at through scripture. And I took the course once and grieved, and I took the course immediately again. And just because Bruce actually came to our house and visited us one time, and he said, "Janet, just marinate in this stuff." And Doug compares it to marinating in it just kind of like loosens the barnacles. And it's like kept you from being inflexible in oh so many ways, and just trust God's timing and the experiences that he brings for you, and find people to talk about it with, which is the beauty of the high trust course, because you have to wrestle with it. And you know, I took it again and again and again before I was a part of the faculty and taught it, because then you get to answer other people's questions about it. But I think mostly for me, it gave me just some sound truths, some wisdom, some new language, a new angle for looking at life that changed everything about marriage and parenting and grandparenting and teaching and even just friendship and relationship. And it's amazing to me the quality of life that's different, not because circumstances are any more or less hard. In this world, there is trouble. I mean, we're coming out, I pray, of a pandemic, you know, and everything else that's going on around us. And in this world, we will have trouble, but the comfort that God gives us, he gives us to share with others. And it is good to be me here with you, and there is joy. And I did not experience that for the first 50 years of my life. It put us in an Airstream and drove us around the country for a while. You know, it lets you take leaps of faith that, gosh, before I would have thought, can I get this right? And what if I fail? And it just wasn't a part of the reasoning anymore.
That is awesome. So you've got it all solved. You get the grace thing, and then it's all joy from that point forward.
Except for when you have a bad day. Except for when you have a bad moment
Tell me what that has looked like for you in this shedding of the barnacles of marinating in these truths, and where you're at currently in this journey of trusting God more deeply with who he says you are.
Well, at this moment, COVID has put me back in the classroom, in a public school classroom. It's beautiful, and it's terribly hard. One of the hardest things is that I don't get to say Jesus, except to myself, you know. And what it looks like to me is learning to speak truth to myself, learning to hear Jesus when Jesus is the only friendly voice in the room, learning to complete the stress response cycle at the end of the day in a way that reminds me who I am and who God is. And I think one of the biggest celebrations in the marinating right now is that for so long, to be in this hard season where we are right now, where Doug and I am right now with work and all, would have in the first 50 years of my life would have put me in a super striving mode. If I could just finally get all this right, then God would reward me with something easier, you know, to do. And I don't have to fight that lie anymore. And I didn't try to fix that lie. It just got dissolved somewhere along the way. And I realized that the other day, that it was like, I'm not blaming God for this, and I'm not blaming myself for this. I'm just experiencing this while trusting God. And for someone who's recovered from living in a fear-based culture and a performance-obsessed mindset, just to not automatically let hard times push me back into striving was a celebration.
Wow. That is such a cool testimony of swapping fear with love. Yeah. And the fruit of the spirit is love, which looks like peace and patience. And that is fruit. And that is awesome for you to go, yeah, I know myself. And in this season, for most of my life, I would have gone into striving and fix it and make it happen. And just the His grace is just this gift of love, which results in a peace that is so subtle and so significant that for a lot of your life and my life, we thought we knew that stuff until we knew it. And then we realized we didn't know it until we experienced it on a deeper level. And I think we're all on this journey of maturing into experiencing His love on a deeper level, which leads to that fruit. And that is
And, you know, I used to laugh and say, as many times as I've driven by vineyards in California or Fredericksburg, Texas, I've never once heard the vine grunting out a grape, you know, do this. And you just wake up one day and enjoy what has transpired because of love.
Amen. Janet, this is awesome. This is fun. Thanks for inviting us into your journey. And if you're listening and do not know about what she's alluding to with the High Trust Leader course, it's one of the resources TrueFace has to help equip people to experience deeper relationships with God and others. And it's a 16-week online course that you'll do in a cohort to really understand and unpack the biblical foundation behind these truths. The next group starts in August. So if you go check out the website, we'll be opening registrations for those groups sometime in the summer. But yeah, that'll be in August, the next round of cohort. So check that out. Text us, email us if we can support you in any way as you navigate these truths, because we are a ministry of people like Janet who are here to do that. Janet, thank you for joining with us. Go check out Janet at loveisfearless.com. Buy her book, Education by Design, Not Default. Janet Newberry, you are awesome. And True Face Tribe, thanks for listening and being a part on this journey with us. Thanks, Janet. See ya.